Innovation and discovery have flourished at Carolina since its founding. Centuries later, these two things continue to play a major role in creating a sustainable campus. Here, on the Sustainable Carolina podcast, we talk with Tar Heels about the intertwined nature of sustainability. It's December, and we're talking about drones and the role they play in research with Peggy Mullen and her intern, Steve Yoon. Peggy is a research technician for the Carolina Drone Lab. That's right, UNC Chapel Hill has a drone lab. And Steve is an undergraduate student here at Carolina who has spent the last semester working for Cardinal. As I record this introduction, Peggy is in Quito, Ecuador, mapping remote wetland ecosystems, and Steve is taking his final exams. I'm so glad I got to sit down with both of them before all of this. It's clear that Peggy is a great mentor, and Steve, a really motivated student. Together, they've been taking a closer look at Carolina's green roofs. They've been using drones and cameras to assess these living roofs, some of which have been around for more than a decade. Let's jump into the episode and see what they've found. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today, Peggy and Steve. It's so great to sit down and talk because, Peggy, I know a lot of your work involves being out in the field. I feel like I always see you lugging around huge boxes of equipment through the office to take somewhere. I'm just super curious how you got into research with drones. Can you tell me a little bit more about your education journey and what led you here?
Yeah, UNC was my first introduction to a lot of different areas of science and research and the world in a lot of ways. It was just such a great way to be exposed to new things, and drones were a small part of that via some work I did out in Morehead City while I was a student. So I did the Morehead City field site, and while I was there, I stayed at the Duke Marine Lab, and they have their drone lab based there, so got to get my hands on a few drones, got a little bit interested in remote sensing science, and then after that, I just kind of was really interested in it in the background, and I was applying to jobs because I really needed a job when I was graduating, and happened to get a response from a company that did some drone-based and plane-based aerial sampling for methane emissions. So that was kind of, that was my first job out of undergrad, and ever since then I've just been staying with the field of remote sensing and drones.
Very cool. And I saw that you like have a former interest in science communication.
Yeah. So I was always very interested in communication and outreach to people. I think that like the biggest hurdle that we have for a lot of just issues in our world right now is the communication between scientists and non-scientists, and there's a little bit of animosity there from both ends, and I think that could be solved by just better communication, more empathetic communications.
That's really true. I think on both sides, the communication and scientific side, we all just want to make sure things are as accurate as can be, and that requires working together. And we also have Steve with us here today, who is still on his college journey. And I bet he's a little bit jet-lagged from attending the UN Climate Conference in Egypt last week. Welcome back to the States, Steve, and welcome to the podcast. How were you able to attend the conference as a student?
Dr. Angel Hsu at the Public Policy Department has 8 badges for students to attend any type of COP every year. And basically, she sends out a email and the ENEC listserv, and you apply for it. And if you get in, then you get to attend COP. It's a great international and professional conference for you to attend. You get to see how the world is coming together to fight climate change and to work together to improve our environment.
And how did you get involved with the Carolina Drone Lab this semester?
The Carolina Drone Lab is part of the EcoStudio internship, so students can apply through the EcoStudio intern to work with Peggy and with Susan at the Carolina Drone Lab. It sounded like a really cool project. Like, you get to fly drones, which is, you know, every environmental's dream. I was lucky enough to get the job. I know it was pretty competitive.
And we'll talk more about your role later in the podcast episode. So let's move on to what the Carolina Drone Lab is. Like Sustainable Carolina, Cardinal is a relatively new part of the Institute for the Environment. How did this group come to be?
It's just a ragtag team of kids. No, so it got started a few years back. 2019, the first idea was brewing, like right after I left the university. I know I had talked to Dr. Jeffrey Bell within the Institute for the Environment. I had spoken with him about his interest in drones, but hadn't really followed up much more than that. But little did I know that while I was in Colorado doing my first job, there was a lot of movement on that project back here. So the original funding for the lab came from the Lenovo Instructional Innovation Grant through the Center for Faculty Excellence on campus. And they combined with Lenovo, the computer company, they have a lot of funding available every year for innovative projects on campus that are trying to expand experiences for undergrads and for graduates. So Dr. Jeffrey Bell and Susan Cohen, who is our PI within the lab, and also the assistant director of the Institute for the Environment, they got together and hatched a plan to do a drone project, just a pilot study, trying to train folks on campus to use drones for research. Susan especially kind of led the effort on forwarding that project and looking for more funding and creating a real program. As that year went on, I found myself looking for a new position while I was out in Colorado, and Susan reached out to me knowing that I had experience in drones and having met me a few times while I was an undergrad, and asked me to come back and help out with that project. So ever since its inception, I have been the technician of the lab. And we've had Troy Walton. He's a collaborator through Italo UAS, which is a company that focuses on veteran-owned drone use for all sorts of different things. And he is a drone pro, and he's our lab manager, and he's a great resource to have. Now we do all sorts of things. We research on campus. We work with students like Steve. We work with faculty and staff. We do work with military groups outside of the university, like the Department of Defense, NOAA, the EPA.
So here's my question. You said you had some interest in drones when you graduated, and in your first job, you were able to gain more hands-on experience. But how do you even go about learning how to fly a drone?
Big question. That's a big question. Right. The biggest barrier to entry is just getting a drone in your hands most of the time. So that's, for one thing, something that we try to supplement as the drone lab, is we try to get drones in the hands of people that want to fly them, because you have like lots of little kids with toy drones, and it's not like they're foreign to people. People know what they are and how they fly, and kind of have a sense of like, oh, it's just like a video game. You know, go this way and it does this, or go that way and it does this. And I think that technological fluency that's really common with people, especially younger people right now, it translates really well to drone use. So it's not really hard to train people on how to fly drones, but the actual getting the drones in their hand is usually the hardest part. I don't know, Steve has been learning this semester, so he probably has more to say on that.
I would say it's easy to learn how to fly drones, but it's hard to learn how to fly drones well.
Have you crashed one yet?
Not yet, just because I remember I was about to crash one, and then Peggy was like, Steve! And like, just the muscles, like, I was just like, oh, I have to stop. So I was able to stop myself from crashing the drone, but it's definitely a skill that you definitely need a lot of experience to be good at flying drones, especially like, for example, in Chapel Hill, it's easy because like you might not have as much wind that's pushing against the drones. But Peggy mentioned that like in the coast, where there's a lot of like strong winds from the oceans coming in and pushing the drones, you might need some professional expertise to be able to fly those.
And earlier you mentioned the importance of getting drones into people's hands so that they can actually learn to fly. At Cardinal, you offer a unique opportunity to the Carolina community, Free Fly Fridays. Do you want to talk about that?
We're so fortunate to have Horace Williams Airport, really local to Chapel Hill, owned by the university, and thankfully the UNC police, we have an agreement with them where we're able to go out and fly as long as we submit requests. So we're able to host the events there. And it's just a really great space. There's all really supportive community that comes out, and I think it's grown exponentially with each Free Fly Friday.
And because you are getting such a diverse community coming out on these days, are there any projects that have resulted from this outreach, like professors or students coming out and having an idea of how they might use it for their work?
I think the most recent example is we're going to work with a grad student doing some alluvial fan studies out by Death Valley in the middle of nowhere. And she needs a way to model those. So she's really interested in DEM, digital elevation model data that we're able to get with the drones, and wants some high quality imagery. So we've been chatting with her about doing some work in the spring, kind of hauling the equipment in the middle of the desert, figuring out how to charge it in the middle of nowhere, and flying in some weird and wild territory. So that's an exciting project. We've also had other folks within the archaeology department kind of want to use the drones for research, like to look at ancient mounds, to look at terrain differences. We're always collaborating with folks on the coast because UNC has such a robust marine science program, so especially coastal change, time series monitoring, all that sort of stuff.
Those all sound like great applications for drones and remote sensing. It really underscores the interdisciplinary nature of your work, from looking at geological features, to artifacts from long ago, to how our coastline is changing. Now let's talk about one of your current projects, the Islands in the Sky project, which is the one that Steve is helping with. Sustainable Carolina and UNC Grounds will both be playing a role in this project as well. Whenever we do sustainability tours, we tend to start them on the roof of the FedEx Global Education Center, which, as you know, is a green roof. It's a good place to kick off these tours because, unlike a lot of the other things that we discuss, like cisterns beneath the ground, students, faculty, and staff can actually see the green roof. It's more tangible. What made you interested in learning more about the functionality and efficiency of our campus green roofs?
This idea came about when I was working with UNC Sustainability. We got together and we were chatting about some things, and then we happened to run into Geneva Green, who used to be the ground sustainability manager, and she was really the gung-ho leader for all of the green roofs on campus and just a really good force for sustainability. And I think she and I had this awesome conversation talking about green roofs, talking about how they're well-known outside of the university, but they don't get nearly enough attention within the university. And I think that was a real sticking point for her. Like, she really cared about wanting to introduce other folks to the green roofs and to pay attention to them, because a lot of these roofs were installed, you know, many, many years ago and haven't really been updated, monitored, looked at since that installation originally. Not to say that they're automatically not doing their job, but just knowing what purpose those serve is really important for everybody at all arms of the university, because the facilities folks are every day, you know, watering the gardens, monitoring them, making sure that they look a certain way, making sure that they're presenting in the way that they want to present. But also there's this whole piece of like, what actually is the garden doing? How is it performing? How well are things growing? Is it truly serving its purpose? Because there's a lot of assumed purpose of green roofs. So, like, there's the obvious kind of water piece where rain falls on the roofs and then it goes into the gray water tanks and then it's able to be used for gray water purposes. And there's the evapotranspiration piece. There's the non-permeable surface piece of easing stormwater. But there's also just this aesthetic piece. There's the, oh, the roofs are supposed to look a certain way. Are they living up to that expectation? Are they serving the non-tangible and tangible purposes that we're expecting of the roofs?
And Steve, you're working as an Eco Studio intern this semester. What aspect of environmental science kind of led you to be like, oh, this sounds like a really cool project?
My interest has always been in GIS and remote sensing. So remote sensing is just the study of anything, like any object or any phenomena that you're not in direct contact with. So we have our typical Landsat, our typical satellites in our space. We also have things like drones, right, where we are able to observe green roofs from a distance. We also have like these cool planes that shoot lasers to look at, you know, for example, the elevation of mountains. So those are all, you know, great examples of remote sensing, but we also have other examples like our eyes. Our eyes are great remote sensing tools. We also have our iPhone cameras. Those are great remote sensing tools, and I've always been fascinated by just how we're able to see so many things from a distance.
Yeah, and you mentioned like your eyes can be a remote sensing tool. There's an aspect of that in this project too, correct?
To a degree, for sure. We're looking at greenness, and we're looking at growth rate. We're looking at the amount of plants that are there, what types of plants are there. So Steve has done a lot of identification work on the grounds. He's been really good at getting out there and just taking our multi-spec camera on the ground and getting some really good imagery. And then we're also interested in the aesthetic value of these roofs. So there's obviously a purpose to green roofs that's meant to be calming, it's meant to be alluring, it's meant to be just pleasing to people that come to the building. So the FedEx roof is a good example of that. Again, it has like this whole glass wall where people can look out and be soothed by the greenery, right? Like, you, when you're on top of a building, you look out and you don't expect to see a garden necessarily all the time. So we're trying to change that paradigm by installing more and more green roofs. So there is that visual component of your eyes are remote sensing tools. You're remotely sensing this green, lush space around you.
And so do the plants vary a lot from roof to roof, or does this similar stuff kind of grow well on all the roofs?
Yeah, they use what's called sedums, that are packs of seeds and types of plants that grow best on these sorts of terrain. There's a specific design for southeastern roofs that they use that have been instituted at other places, and we replicated that when we originally installed these roofs. So since then, there have been certain plants that have kind of drifted and colonized some roofs. I mean, that's just how plants work. You know, sometimes you wake up and there's 10 plants you don't recognize in your garden, and that's what they find there a lot. Sometimes they try to combat it. Sometimes they just let it go if they feel like it's serving a good purpose. So that non-quantifiable component of, they look a certain way here, looks a certain way at this other place, we're trying to get a better sense of the differences between the roofs, not only how they look, but how they're performing, greenness on the different roofs, and the heat component, the thermal component. We're trying to look at comparisons of thermal distribution on the roofs, depending on the vegetative cover.
Steve, you mentioned some of your challenges with flying drones, but for this project specifically, has there been a learning curve to anything that you've been working on?
My interest has always been in remote sensing. So coming into this internship, I knew how to work with the data that we would collect from drones. But the hardest part was, or the part that I was very unfamiliar with, is actually, you know, knowing how to collect data with this mode of remote sensing, which is drones, right? And I was initially like really worried, like drones is a lot of like improvising, a lot of like retrofitting, a lot of being quick in your feet, and sometimes I'm not good at that. So I was really worried about that first, but Peggy and Susan made sure that this is a really welcoming environment. They made sure that I can come in here and be comfortable with flying drones and be comfortable with the work that I'm doing.
And do you have a final outcome that you're working toward within this project as a whole?
I am working on a final presentation, but this is a continuing project, something that that future students will continue to work on and to build upon. I believe that I built the cornerstone or the base for other students to build upon.
From what I understand, the Islands in the Sky project is wrapping up about half of the roof mapping this semester. And then during the spring 2023 semester, there will be more mapping plus GIS analysis. Once the project concludes at the end of summer 2023, that data will be shared, correct?
We're not only doing this work to monitor our own roofs, but to check out how drones can fit into this space. Is it a viable way of analyzing and assessing roofs? What are the downfalls? What are the advantages? We want to share that information with the community. And then we want to share this data with classes. So we're going to provide this data to anybody who wants it on campus, any classes that are interested in analyzing it and taking it into the future.
Yeah, for sure. And I love the idea that, you know, this is going to be shared data and anybody at the university can use it, and outside too, maybe?
Definitely outside. I think there's, like I mentioned at the start, there's a lot of interest in green roofs all throughout the country, and each region, each zone sort of has their own ideas of how they want green roofs to fit in, especially in a semi-urban space like a college campus. So this data and the results of this project are going to be really informative for not just within the university, but for outside groups and folks interested in developing green spaces on semi-urban places.
That's fantastic. And I just think we're so lucky here to have one of these green roofs be so accessible. It's one of the many ways that UNC Chapel Hill is creating a living lab around students, faculty, and staff. All right, I wanted to wrap up this episode with a fun game. Can you tell me about your favorite drone and why that drone is your favorite?
Okay, I guess I'll go first. definitely the Parrot Anafi. Just because that was the drone that I flew the most, and these drones have never failed me so far, even though I've only had like a semester of experience. But definitely a Anafi Thermal. Although I will say, for anyone who's listening, they have a really cool drone that's like a size of like a manta ray. Like,
yeah, the Alta X is that drone that Steve's referring to. It's a beast, and it's really good for lots of big work. I think. The Alta is a very cool drone, the Alta X. It's that large drone that's like the size of a human wingspan. It's just huge, and it can carry so much equipment, and we've used it really extensively on fire monitoring projects where we need to lift heavy things. So I'm tempted to say that, but I honestly think that my pet favorite is the DJI M300, which honestly doesn't get as much airtime as I wish it did. But it flies exactly how you want it to fly. It has a little bit of a payload capacity, perfect enough for small sensors. And when I was out in Colorado, when I used to fly on oil and gas facilities, I used a drone, basically the same exact drone, but like the generation before. So I have a place in my heart for that platform, I think.
There you have it. And now I need to go look up what these drones look like. Peggy says that Cardinal looks forward to expanding its team and internship experiences as they obtain more funding. She's also excited to plug in to the UNC GIS community and expand into additional creative uses of drones. If you're on the UNC Chapel Hill campus and interested in using drones in your own work or research, contact Cardinal. They have resources and they offer training if you want to get a bird's eye view of things. That's all for today's podcast. Thanks for joining the Sustainable Carolina podcast. We'll see you next year.